I'm Andy Jeffries. I'm the service manager for children's practice teams in the City of Edinburgh Council. I've been in this role for about the last 5 years, and I've worked very closely with Mark for, I would say, about half that time. We've really had a focus on learning and building a learning culture within the organisation. I think the partnership with the university has been crucial to that. I want to talk about why knowledge exchange is important, not just from a purely knowledge-based point of view. It's important in relation to the work that we do in protecting kids in a very direct way. Those of you that know me well and are used to hearing me talking a lot, maybe more than you would want to, can probably predict exactly what I'm about to say. But I don't apologise for that, because I think that in a time of change, it's important to give clear key messages and do that quite often. That is part of managing change, and we're in a massive change process at the moment within the council. Really tough times ahead, budget reductions, work going up all the time, and I think it's really important that we focus on stuff that's going to make a difference within this time, and I'm convinced that this work is going to make a difference. Mark referred to the work of Eileen Munro earlier on, the review of child protection in England, and I think that that piece of work is probably as significant as any piece of work in the whole area of child protection for quite a number of years. In brief, her analysis is that we've tried to manage child protection through a compliance culture where we set procedures, expect people to follow that, tick the boxes, do it in time, finish it and go on to the other one. That's just a very crude analysis of the Munro view of child protection. And what she's saying is that it's important to move on from that towards a learning culture, and that if we're going to intervene effectively with children and young people who are at risk, we need to have a learning culture, because you can't do this by numbers, you can't do it simply by following a procedure. I should say before I go on that that doesn't mean that we don't need compliance in a social work service or in a multi-agency partnership. You know, we have to do things on time, we have to have procedures, but those are the basics, and on top of that, we have to build the learning culture. So Munro talks about that and says it's really important, because the way in which we will get it right for children is by exercising professional judgment, and we can't exercise professional judgment if people are terrified about what their boss is going to say about them getting it wrong. We have to make space for imagination and people exercising professional discretion, because at the end of the day, we pay people a lot and they have spent a lot of time getting professional qualifications that they should be able to use. Munro tunes in a lot. I mean, it's a bit disappointing to me in Scotland that we haven't had a national response to the Munro review, but I do think that what she is saying, what Eileen Munro is saying, is very consistent with the messages that came out anyway in Changing Lives, the 21st Century Review of Social Work in Scotland in 2006. And they talked about making best use of skills across the public sector workforce, refocusing on values and making effective use of therapeutic relationships. And I think that agenda from Changing Lives was really looking ahead to tougher times, looking ahead to the demand for the service going up, looking ahead to the need to make efficiencies, and thinking about how do we actually make a difference to children and families. So that's all clear and quite consistent. In Edinburgh, we've been on a journey over the last 5 years or so. I came into my job at the end of 2007, or maybe it was the start of 2008. It was probably the worst time I could have picked, because we just had this awful inspection of child protection across the multi-agency partnership, in which the inspectorate said that we were unsatisfactory in relation to protecting those children who were most at risk. And that is clearly not a place you want to or can afford to be in children's social work. Without making a big meal of it, you know this already, most of you will anyway, we've been on a journey since that time of continuous improvement. And when the care inspectorate came back this year, they have said that child protection in Edinburgh is a strength in social work and in the multi-agency partnership. So I'm hugely proud of that, and everybody in this room today that's made a contribution to that should be proud of it as well. The starting point for that was pretty basic. We didn't have business processes in place. The budget was a mess. It was millions of pounds overspent. We were underperforming on the basic things that we try to measure, basically doing things in time, reports to the reporter, child protection, all of that. And while that was the case, we weren't allowed, I wasn't allowed, to really have a focus on anything else for that first year or two. We had to reorganise, we had to cut the number of managers, and we had to do things like setting up social care direct. So it was a massively challenging period. But to cut a long story short, we got through that period. I think we came out of it stronger. I think I came out of it with a stronger team, a smaller team than we had before, but a stronger team. And there was a real challenge about how you actually maintain staff morale and keep people on board when you're in the process of getting rid of jobs and reducing budgets and asking people to do more. And what people used to say to me at that time was, actually, we're sick of hearing about KPIs and the budget and the reorganisation. When are we actually, have you forgotten what social work is, and when are you going to talk to us about that? So, you know, at that time I was saying, well, I've probably not got time to talk about it now, but I will get around to that at some point. And so I would say about, you know, by 2010 we were in a different place, and we were actually, within my management team, we were actually talking about how can we engage with this and how can we take forward practice development. And actually it's been so long since we've been having these kind of conversations, we've almost forgotten how to do that. So we're at quite a basic stage. And a question for us was, who should lead that? Because, you know, I'm not an expert in practice. It's been more than 10 years since I've knocked on anybody's door. Well, I don't mean anybody's door, I mean for a professional reason. I do have some mates left, contrary to what most folk might believe. But, you know, the question was, who can we look to lead practice in the organisation? We can't just leave practitioners to get on with it and invent it themselves, but neither can managers impose it. And the university has an important role, but they are academics and they're not knocking on the doors either. So we've got to find a way to join all of that together. And that was where we came up. It was actually Andy McWhirter's idea. I shouldn't take credit for this, but that Christmas I was in the office and working between the holidays. I thought, I'm just going to have conversations about this stuff and not do anything else. And talking to Andy, he came up with this concept of how could we get a partnership between the managers, between the workforce learning team, between practitioners and the university, and what would that actually look like? It probably wouldn't look like picking practice models and imposing them. It's probably going to be, first of all, talking to folk about what they think is working. And that was when Mark introduced us to the concept of knowledge exchange, which is not a top-down dissemination of expert words of wisdom from me or Mark or anybody else, but it's actually about nurturing the front line and developing practice wisdom of people who are doing the job. We're not the experts, but we have to be the leaders of that culture change. And one of the things we found important at an early stage was actually going right back and talking about values and what do we believe. And we came up with an Edinburgh statement of values, although we didn't invent that ourselves. You know, how could we? Because we're talking about stuff that's quite universal. I think we drew on the values statement of the International Federation of Social Workers. But we put that out to staff, and we had an event and had it on the table and got people talking about, you know, where they saw their values in relation to what practice is like now and what it's like in working in an organisation under this level of pressure and trying to deliver that difference for children. So since then, we've had quite a number of practitioner events. I'll not go into this in detail. You know, a lot of you in the room have been at these things, or at least some of them, but the ideas for these events have been driven by that partnership in the practice panel, and we've been continually going out to people in practice teams and residential, family-based care, youth offending, whoever, and saying, what do you think? What is the kind of stuff you would like to be talking about? And all these themes have been driven by practitioners. And at every one of these events, we've had practitioners actually leading a bit of input and talking about their practice. And we've done it in a way that's quite participative. And that seems to have gone down really well, really good feedback. You know, there's been lots of spin-off benefits to that work. And as Matt was saying, I wouldn't take the credit within the practice panel for everything that's happened, but I think what we have done is been talking all the time about a learning culture and giving people permission to do that. So things have happened like local reading groups starting up in teams, and while we're here, I can't fail to mention the publication of Audrey and Helen's book, which is, you know, everywhere I go, I talk about this, and folks say, that's absolutely amazing that folk doing this busy job in their own time can write something like this and have it published. I think the first print sold out quite quickly. I think probably the second one has as well, but people have really enjoyed that. And one of the things we got Audrey and Helen to do was stand up at, I think that was our biggest event, there was about 80-odd practitioners there from right across social work services, and they gave a bit of a pitch about the book, but we also had other practitioners talking about specific ways they use to communicate with children. Really, really good stuff. But this year, the main focus of the practice panel has been this knowledge exchange project, which we're here to talk about today. That's meant that we haven't done, I mean, actually, people say, what is the practice panel? And actually, that's an interesting question at this point in time, because it's not one group of people that has a meeting and has a standing agenda. It's actually quite fluid. So I think we need to regroup on that and say, well, what is it? And how, we've got a circulation list of people we invite to meetings, and there's a bit of a floating cast of characters, and they all contribute. But I think from now and from the end of this, we need to think in Edinburgh about how we take that work forward and how does that link in with partners like East Lothian, who have been working very closely with us on the knowledge exchange. I think in the future, what's clear to me is that a model which uses direct practitioner feedback to inform training delivery will be the most effective. One of the things that came across very powerfully to me from the work that we did with Kate Skinner was something she presented about a piece of research. I think it was post Edinburgh Inquiry, I can't remember what it was, but this is a piece of research which indicated where the learning curve was in relation to a specific piece of training, and what it showed you was that the learning curve goes way up like this when people are doing training. It then plateaus for a wee while, but then has a steep dive after. So what that was telling me was that people were really enjoying coming to a training. I mean, you come to a room like this, you're not in your office, you've not got the phone going, brilliant, but you might enjoy all the input that you hear. But the question for me is, in tough times where we are reducing budgets, we are having our training team cutting children and families, so it's going to be really challenging. And how do we make everything we do have an impact on practice? And I think that means we probably have to do a bit less. We probably need to focus down on important areas, and we'll only know what those areas are if we're talking to practitioners all the time about what they find to be important and effective. And I think that our workforce learning strategy and our self-evaluation should promote and support learning through critical reflection on actual practice. And you'll hear people later on talking about the critical reflection groups that they've been part of. But I think that is actually core to taking forward effective practice, that people are thinking all the time about their own practice, questioning what they're doing, why they do it that way, what it might look like if it was different, and learning from others as well. And it's interesting that this can actually connect up with self-evaluation. One of the things from the Edinburgh inspection is they thought what we needed to do more of was multi-agency self-evaluation. And I think we do need to do more of that, and we do need to evaluate on the basis of actual practice in actual cases. One of the things we've done in the practice teams is we've got a model of evaluation that looks at a couple of cases a fortnight, and I go around and it rotates around teams and I do it with an independent person. But we've actually got a couple of workers in that team reflecting on practice in a case that we've chosen in advance with their team leader. They write the self-evaluation, we read that, and then we go and have a meeting and we talk to them for an hour or so through that case, and then we give them feedback on what we think about it. And it's an interactive process, it's pretty informal. But what practitioners are saying is that it's great to have that opportunity of self-evaluation, but it's also helping us learn on the job, because we're getting ideas through this conversation about how to work differently, and that will have a real impact on what we do for children and how we do it. So it's just one example of how learning and self-evaluation and practice and the outcome for the child is all connected up, and I think we need to do more stuff like that. And the support of managers and frontline supervisory relationships will be absolutely crucial to getting that right. I've only got one more thing to say, which is that this is hugely challenging to keep this up, because we've got this challenge to shift the balance of care, by which I mean we've got the 1,000 kids in Edinburgh who cannot safely live at home. It's costing us, and then, you know, the outcomes aren't always great. We need to shift that back, and we need to get practice that is more effective to keeping children in their communities, in their families, and in Edinburgh placements. And we've actually set a tight set of targets around that for the coming years, and that includes doing pretty radical things like shutting down some services, shutting down residential units, doing less of some things, more of others. So we really have a challenge to actually make this work in a very real way and get the outcomes for those children. But I think if we continue to do the work that we're doing in relation to learning culture and working together on that, I'm convinced that we can do that, and I'm quite optimistic for the future. So thank you guys for coming today. I think I'm now going to introduce Sean from East Lothian, and I'll just take a walk back along the nice cafe tonight.